Stand by for action.
Welcome to the Roy Harper Podcast. This is episode number 30, published in June 2010. My name is Paul Davison, and I run the website www.stormcock.net. In this show, we have some news, an introduction to Roy Harper, an interview with Roy Harper by Leslie Judd from a few years back, listener feedback, and a selection of music. So a lot has happened since the last podcast, and I'm very happy to say I've been to 3 Roy Harper gigs since then, which was something I began to fear would never happen again. As I announced last time, Roy was touring with Joanna Newsom in the UK and also at some dates across Europe, and I was able to go to the Royal Festival Hall gigs both nights, and the first night being on my birthday, so it was a very nice birthday present, and they were great. Roy played for 50 minutes, maybe an hour, fairly short but sweet set, no pun intended. And if you've not heard the Joanna Newsom CD, the last triple album that she brought out, that is fantastic as well. So I had a lovely evening. Now, Roy was rusty, and in fact the first night he said that the audience had to be sympathetic towards him because there would be bits of rust falling off as he was settling back into performing live. And yeah, it was a bit rusty, let's be honest about that. The words got forgotten here and there, and you know, the guitar work slipped up every so often. But what really struck me was that it was such a joy to see him play live again, but also that Joanna's audience were very warm and welcoming to Roy, and obviously they know that she is very appreciative of his music and sees him as a great influence. And that really came out. He got such a supportive reception from them. It was really lovely atmosphere, something really to behold. And on the second night that I saw a more polished performance altogether and smoother and probably a bit more enjoyable than the first night, but different. And from what I can tell, Roy's performance got better as he went through the rest of the tour. And of course then we heard that he'd decided to do a solo gig at the Jazz Cafe in London early June. And as far as I can tell, this came about through an offer from the Mojo magazine people to say, okay, you can do this gig. And I think that Roy, being rehearsed already, kind of felt, well, why not, you know. So off we went to Camden Town in London on a very nice sunny Saturday. And for me it was an amazing day because many years ago there was a whole bunch of people who used to go to gigs together, as any regular listeners will know from these podcasts. And it was like winding back the clock. We met up in a garden of a pub, and oh, it was just wonderful seeing so many people again and just, you know, filling in what people have been up to, what sort of stories people have got to tell, how much we were looking forward to the gig, you know, all this kind of stuff. Really lovely atmosphere. And then the gig itself, as others have said, there was this feeling of expectation that something wonderful was going to happen. And it did. It was a sublime gig. It was just wonderful. Back to those old days of Roy captivating everyone from the stage, in between song banter, wonderful performances. It had everything. And on a personal level, I was really bowled over by a few people actually who came up and said hello and recognised me from my photo or whatever. And then one person in particular, I was talking to somebody about the Enid and my progressive rock enthusiasm, and somebody turned and said, "Oh, were you the guy that does the podcast?" Because they recognised my voice while I was talking, and that was my 5 minutes of fame. If you're listening, thank you. That really made my night, actually. The set list, Chris Stoner posted it to the email list. He played One Man Rock and Roll Band, North Country, Don't You Grieve, Pinches of Salt, Hangman, Another Day, Commune, The Green Man, Me and My Woman. And the encore was When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease. What a great set list. The best moment for me was when it became evident to me he was going to play Hangman, because he started talking about capital punishment. And I had this kind of shiver going through my spine. It was just one of those moments. So a wonderful night. Absolutely wonderful. And let's hope it happens again. Also, winding back to the Royal Festival Hall, on the second night I was lucky enough to pop backstage to say hello and met up with Roy, and he was really in his element. He obviously was enjoying playing live again. And I met Joanna as well, who also was very charming. So I had quite a nice time, as you can imagine. I can't speak for Roy, but it seemed so evident to me that he was really enjoying playing live again. So, you know, touch wood, fingers crossed, and whatever else you can do, in the hope that we'll be seeing him again at some point in the near future. So now time for some music, and since he was playing it on the tour, I'm going to play Pinches of Salt from the album Garden of Uranium, or Descendants of Smith, as it was originally called.
Arthur read stories he got from the shelf in the gingerbread house of the men in between, making his mind up to keep to himself, and somewhere the future had been. Pinches of salt, nobody's fault, just the tune of the moon on the ocean. One year, quite suddenly, out of the blue, the phone box grew curtains with Sanderson prints, and designers of countryside loaded the view with sort of decisions and hints. And Arthur slept in on the edge of his seat, way back in his mind where the butterflies flew, bred non-committal to live nice and neat, with lots of his dreams coming true. Pinches of salt, nobody's fault, just the tune of the moon on the ocean. The gig on the stage, the butterflies fluttered and scenery shook. Shapes became colors, and turning a page wasn't just quite by the book. Ah, but Arthur was sure there must be some more. Pinches of salt, nobody's fault, as the wolves of the law blew down the door with the tune of the moon on the ocean.
Next, we have an introduction to Roy Harper. Now, because of the Joanna gigs and so on, I thought there might be some people who are new to Roy's music and might have found the podcast through one means or another. So I thought, well, let's try and do it a bit more introductory this time round. In 1976, Bob Harris helped with an introduction audio thing with contributions from Dave Gilmour, Paul McCartney, Ian Anderson and Roy Harper. This was disc A on Song of the Ages, the Roy Harper interviews, which was issued in 1996 and is out of print. But I have permission to play it for you here, and I think it's an interesting historical document. Not necessarily completely up to date, obviously, because it's quite old, but well worth a listen.
Hello, this is Bob Harris in London presenting an introduction to Roy Harper, his history and his music.
I can leave and go with some Sharp Shark and get myself put on the hit train, you know, and write a few little singles, you know, la-di-da. And I've seen it all happen, isn't it? I've seen it happen 1,000 times. You know, a guy's not making it and he really wants to make it, you know, and it's not happening for him. And, well, you know, he just gets the lipstick out and starts. Yes, well, I was a well renegade at school, you know. I didn't want to know school, as a matter of fact, and I left very early. Went into the Air Force because I wanted to leave home. And when I came out, I was sort of 22 or 23. And I'd really thought about what I wanted to do. I was very clear in my mind. I just picked up a guitar and started to do it.
Of the sea of living dead, I see the same old smells aboard my ship of shapelessness. Meandering, suspended in amorphous tastelessness.
Right at the beginning, when I first got involved with playing the guitar one, I was singing on the streets. And for a long time I sang on the streets. And then I went, I was asked whether I would like to make a record. And I said yes, and we went in and made it in a day, and we mixed it the next day, and out it came. And I used a lot of the people that I'd known from folk clubs, which I'd just got into at the time. John Renborn and Richie Blackmore were among them. The album, in many ways, is the best of the first three. There's a song on it that I've used the music for since and updated the lyrics on this last album, which was called Legend.
There was a man from Muddlebrow whose problems he lay down upon another's doorstep in a distant stranger. strangest town, but forgetting what he'd come for, and in patronizing tones, he gave them all his clothes and bread to stop their moans and groans. Your fault where you were born, he said, all condescending. We cannot all be made like me with lots of true blue blending. But never mind, I'll pass the hat around our gracious nation. The strangers held their laughter back, remembering their station. Didn't stop whoever rose and spoke. But in the fields potatoes flowered and goats came with high tides, and men came back from cutting wood and gathered by firesides.
That was Referendum, a track from Roy Harper's new LP on Chrysalis called When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease, and there'll be more from the album coming up later on. But meanwhile, Ian Anderson has a few stories to tell.
There was this guy in Blackpool when I was a lad, going back, and he was actually the remnant of the Beatnik era, called Jeff the Cake, and he was about, 38, very short hair, beard, you know, and typically beatnik-type clothes. Used to clean up the empty teacups in the North Station buffet bar. And I used to hang out there with Jeffrey, see, when we were at art school together and just begun to play music. And he, in the course of a very limited beatnik-type conversation, punctuated with man or like or any of those sort of phrases, far out, hadn't come in then, you see, described to me this character who had very recently left Blackpool, whose name was Roy Harper, to go down to the big city and had become famous. And in such terms as famous meant actually you had maybe a line in Melody Maker or something, meant you'd made it then, you know. The whole thing was an incredible source of inspiration to me, because the knowledge that somebody had actually left the confines of Blackpool, you know, with its pleasure beach and holiday trade, and actually gone down to London as a musician and made it and got written about in the papers, had even made an album. So when I went down to went down from Blackpool to London to, you know, to be successful as well, the first thing I did when I arrived was to go to a record store and find a record. by Roy Harper to see if this signpost to success, you know, was actually writ as large as had been described to me. So I came across this album called Come Out Fighting Genghis Smith, which was actually Roy's second album, I think, yeah. And could make neither head nor tail of what it was about, except that some of the songs, I felt I knew what they were about, you know, in terms of lyrically. There were things like Nobody's Got Any Money in the Summer, you know, which was very applicable to me at that particular time.
Nobody's got any money in the summer. Oh dear me, what a terrible drag. I couldn't get very much number then in summer, beseeching the red man to be as soft as he can. 'Cause I've got a little money coming when I sell my MBA.
It was a lyrical style that was actually beyond me, because I was writing at that time similar sort of things, but unknowingly, you know, the conscious attempt is to try and follow a style, you know, I could not do. But I was going that way without realising it, and reading somebody else's lyrical material, I couldn't understand it. It was sort of close to what I was doing. Then, a few months later, after Jethro Tull had become reasonably sort of successful in the blues circuit in England, we played a little club, folk club in Grantham, which I don't remember where Grantham is, actually, somewhere in England. Somewhere off the motorway, that's all I can remember. And top of the bill was Roy Harper. Second on the bill was Stephen Grossman. And we were at the opening act, a heavy rock blues group. And Stephen Grossman went on, and 5 minutes before Harper was due on stage, no sign. So there was us and Stephen Grossman sitting in this seedy dressing room thinking, well, when's the top act going to show, you know? And the door opened, and this sort of raggy, lumberjack-like figure sort of staggered into the room carrying a very moth-eaten old guitar case. And I remember having one trouser leg tucked into one tough boot. You know, those tough boots they used to have, fleece line sort of things. And said, which way to the stage? And we said, that-a-way, you know, that-a-way. And he said, where's the bar? I mean, at least he got his priorities right, you know, like he was there to do the gig, which way's the stage, then which way is the bar? So we explained where the bar was, and somebody said, are you Roy Harper? Said, yeah. He's very surly and very, very defensive, you know. And at some point I said, you just made it in time then, you know, did you car break down or something? He said, no, a train was late. I said, train? He said, yeah, come on the train. I said, you always go on the train to gigs. He said, yeah. He said, well, I have to do these days because it's, you can't always rely on hitchhiking.
Look down your highway, tell me what you see. Well, if you're down my way, you know it could well be me. And stood on your corner, in a man and I'm down on one knee. So don't you think that it's better we speak the same tongue out here in this weather? You know we must surely belong. Birds of a feather. Give me a lift, man.
shift, man, in your empty car. I got the highway blues and I hold my shoes and I cannot choose what I look like.
I then saw him again at the first Hyde Park open air thing, which was with Pink Floyd, and that was Roy Harper opening the bill, and us on second. You see, we'd like overtaken the signpost, and we kept left, you know. Where obviously he'd sort of is involved with the Pink Floyd, perhaps stemmed from then as well. I don't know.
And the Hyde Park concert Ian Anderson talks about there was the first of a series of big open-air free concerts in central London. And interestingly, Roy Harper also played the last summer concert there with a lineup that later recorded The Game for the new LP, When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease. And joining him on stage and on the record was Dave Gilmour.
He, in fact, asked me to play on that track. And in fact, come to think of it, what the first thing we did was that I rehearsed it and played it at Hyde Park, I think, was the first thing. I can't remember whether we did the album track or Hyde Park first. But I did do it at a live gig with them, actually, come to think of it. And then after or before. No idea. We did the album track. Just one or two evenings' work doing the backing track with Steve Broughton and John Paul Jones. Then a couple more sessions later on, when I couldn't get the guitar solo together. And then I had to go off on tour, and he had to get it finished. And Chris Bedding finished it off.
And right now, my darling, I'm lying here dreaming of feeling the whole daylight between us. So wherever you are,
then after the next tour, it was when we were doing the finishing off our album, and Roy came into a session and suggested that he do some singing, and we said fine, do some, and stuck him out there straight away in front of a microphone and got on with it.
How long did that take, Dave?
The actual recording of it originally took some time. I can't remember how long. A couple of sessions, I think it took. Because he's never really done anything. He's never really sung anyone else's lyrics before, I don't think. And I guess he finds it a little bit strange working to someone else's wishes, you know, to work within the confines of someone else's work. Really, I think he found that difficult. But like a true trooper, he got it together.
Did you give him the freedom, though, to express it in his own way?
I don't think he knew exactly how he wanted to express it, so we guided him along in various places. No, we didn't actually restrict him or say, no, you can't do that, or tell him how he should do it. We wanted him to do it how he would do it. Worked out very well. He sang Have a Cigar at Nebworth.
Mm.
He can come on tour and sing Have a Cigar every night if he likes next time we go out.
We've touched upon Roy's relationship with the Pink Floyd, yet he's probably best known for his involvement with Led Zeppelin. And Jimmy Page has contributed to Roy's records more than anyone we talk to.
Oh, you know, I can't explain Jimmy to you, really. You know, it'd take me a million years, and it'd take him a million years to explain me, you know. But his contribution was enormous, really, because just when the song needs it, he just lifts it out. with that amazing tape echo guitar. And that's what it is, he's playing to himself. When it sort of goes da-da-da-dang, da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da. And every time that phrase came back, he was playing another one with it.
Yeah.
And timing it too, you see. Which you can do if you, you know, I mean, if you're good enough to do it. And when it came back, you see, the original one that he played, and he was playing a harmony to it.
Yeah.
You see. And he only needed one take. You know, he only needed one take to do it, most of that stretch. And he spent most of his time, I mean, we did spend most of our time drinking tea, really. You know, and thinking about what we were going to do. But, you know, there are those moments, that, you know, like the golden moments in the studio when you think, Christ, you know, it's really worth it. See, with him, you've got to... I know when he's going. You know, I know when I've got him going. You've got to get him standing up and you've got to get him rocking. You know?
Yeah.
You've got to get him as though he's playing in the front of Zeppelin or something, right? You've got to get him rocking, you know? And you know when he's going because he's swinging backwards and forwards, you know? And you say, there you go, Jim. He's going now. He's going, you know? Turn the tape on, you know? Get it going.
Same old rock from the Roy Harper LP Stormcock, and in fact, Led Zeppelin themselves recorded their own tribute to Roy on their third LP, a track called Hats Off to Harper. And Jimmy Page's involvement extended to him making two major London concert appearances with Roy, one at the Albert Hall, and then later at Roy's Valentine's Day Massacre at the Rainbow Theatre, a concert which also featured Keith Moon on drums and Ronnie Lane on bass. Between these two events, Roy met Paul McCartney at Abbey Road Studios, where they were both recording at a time when Roy was very ill.
All I really know about Roy is that, you know, we use the same studio sometimes. And I say, there he was. One evening, you know, he was telling me, oh, he should be dying shortly, you know. So we almost kind of had a little farewell party for him. Well, listen, Roy, I mean, this is quite a shock and stuff. But he was laughing about it and stuff. So we were all having a joke about it, you know. Oh, when is it next week and stuff, you know. Then I saw him a couple of weeks later, and he hadn't died yet. And then he said, no, it's, you know, it's all right or something. You know? So, I mean, it's every time I just see him, it's just, oh, he hasn't died yet. You know, it's one of them, I'm afraid. But I've heard a lot of his tracks wafting around the studios here, you know. And it's beautiful. Beautiful.
Paul McCartney talking of Roy at Abbey Road. And another guy who spent time in the studio there recording with Roy was Ian Anderson.
The song was called Home, and it was the only recorded track on a live album that he did, I suppose 2 years ago or something. And he had had this notion in his brain, you know, of a particular sound, a particular style of playing that he associated with me, and that's what he wanted to hear on this record. He wanted to hear the flute playing the style that most people associate with me, you know, sort of breathy, singing and playing at the same time deal, you know, something pretty effervescent and bubbly. I thought, right, well, here we go, you know, sort of the whole Jethro Tull bit, you know, the freaking fluting bit, you know, at the end, over a coda, you see, and we did... became a sort of Latin American exercise with lots of percussion and shouting well into the dawn, you know, with maracas and claves rattling off the walls.
The sun on her face gently plays, the breeze of her song softly sways. She tells me in so many ways, she's mine for the rest of my days. And I need some loving, yes, I need some loving. Oh, I need
Roy Harper and Ian Anderson and a track called Home. And on stage, Roy really does establish a very special relationship with his audience, as Ian Anderson explains.
Roy obviously goes on to probe, you know, but I don't think it should be seen as probing the audience in the sense that he's poking needles in and trying to get them to react. It's not that. He's really trying to find out about himself as a reflection.
It's more to do with personally owning up to what is going on around one and to one and with one. I think that my assessment of myself is based on pretty level-headed information that I receive from the mirror.
My love, the day we began. The grass in the meadow was long. The scribble lark sang, forget me not, I love you. Forget me not, I love you. Through and through, we're like the springtime. We'll have much more to say when we say it, much less when we don't. Forget me not, I love you.
Yes, I do.
Forget me not, I love you. Through, through. Soon the old winter will go. Watching the summertime grow. Forget me not, I love you.
Yes, I do.
Forget me not, I love you. Through, through.
Forget you not. Forget you not.
More music there from the new Roy Harper album called When an Old Cricketer Leaves the Crease, and that was Forget Me Not. And we're staying with the new LP now for this song called The Spirit Lives.
Where once were men are now but sheep in fiction and far cry. From planet Earth's proud animal, who would be you and I? Alas, our forebears drank the cup of poisoned alibi and made excuses far and wide, made God in the sky. There's boogaloos now round the world, bad trips for everyone. No more the man of paradise or the Celt of Albion. They queue like burning moths to spread the old-time vicious lie. You Christians destroyed our tribe. I'll fight you till I die.
Is the history of the state. Incestuous exploiters of a catalogue of hate. The man of peace was overrun by armies of lords.
signed their names to any war and sang to praise the sword. The mission heads for outer space, the voices ring and swear. Aeons of self-righteousness, the senseless echoes knell. The words get much more meaningless. Even plainer to tell.
Roy Harper from the new LP and a song called The Spirit Lives. And it's true to say that during the past 10 years, really, Roy has established himself among the most influential and respected of British musicians. Here's Ian Anderson.
I suppose Roy Harper comes... This would be a terrible analogy. I mean, really, you know, hurtful, I think, to both parties. But he comes, I think, he's the only guy who actually fulfills what Bob Dylan ostensibly was all about in the beginning. He actually sings songs that are really about things. You know, he doesn't invent songs for no reason at all. I know, for instance, of several well-known groups who get, like, stuck for lyrics, and I think, what can we write about? They're trying to find some excuse for getting up there on stage and playing. You know, and with Roy Harper, there is none of that at all. I mean, he actually has to write those songs. I'm sure he doesn't sit down and think, you know, what am I going to write about? I've got to write a song today. There's a good, damn good reason for everything, every word, every sentence that he puts down.
He's one of these people who never wants to compromise anything, I don't think. And he often takes things a lot further than I personally would in the way he performs. But I like it. I like the way he does things. I admire the way he does it. His courage in getting out there and doing it quite that way. And his very... his honesty and openness in the way he puts over his own life across on stage. And I also think he's very much more talented than a lot of people who've been more successful than he is. Maybe because people are frightened of that sort of thing that he does. Of the kind of honesty that he puts over. I think it scares quite a lot of people off.
Dave Gilmore, thanks a lot.
Locked. Mortal combat as the future shadows loom. The guardian of man's spirit fights his way across the room.
where the sick majority infest the myths of doom, but the lanterns of children hold firm in full bloom, and we'll walk along. Citadels of dreams I shake while flying through. Creation's key seems just in reach, oh, but then it's overdue. But as darkness surrounds us, I'm reaching for you. Thank you.
Roy Harper and Hallucinating Light. And finally now, a word from Paul McCartney.
So he's always kind of just living very much for the moment and just kind of getting it on and just wherever he is, you know, he's just... And he's, I liked him, you know, I liked him. He's not dead yet, folks. But, no, I like him just for that kind of thing, you know, that's about it.
Yeah, because he's a very strong personality, isn't he? Mm. And that comes across.
Very forthright, yeah, but that's what, I say, that's the impression I get, is there's not much point being unforthright. And I suppose that's it, really, you know, it seems like... he'd just rather just kind of talk about things that really concern him rather than go through all the usual bull, you know, that can surround things. So he always just comes out, all right, how are you? Yeah, well, I thought that about your last one. That was all right. Yeah, and he's just very forthright.
Yeah.
So I'd say that has summed him up for me.
When the day is done and the ball has spun in the umpire's pocket away, and all remains in the groundsman's pains for the rest of time and the day, there'll be one man down his master pushing for four with the spin on a dusty pitch with 2 pounds 6 of willow wood in the sun when an old cricketer leaves the crease. You never know whether he's on. If sometimes you're catching a fleeting glimpse of a 12th man at silly mid-on, and it could be Jeff and it could be John with a new ball sting. And it could be me, and it could be thee, and it could be the sting in the ale, sting in the ale.
You've been listening to Roy Harper, his history and his music, featuring the voices of Ian Anderson, Paul McCartney and Dave Gilmour, with tracks from Jethro Tull, The Pink Floyd and Led Zeppelin. The programme was edited by Bill Foster, written by Chris Briggs, and produced and presented in London by Bob Harris.
My songs are very important to me, you know. I mean, I write them with a real, you know, with real feeling. I don't know how much feeling comes across in them when they're recorded. I suspect that there's a fair amount there because, I mean, I like what I do and I'm very critical. That's the word I was looking for before. I've been looking for it for bloody three quarters of an hour, man. Critical. Yeah, and it's, you know, isn't it funny? It's just on the tip of your tongue, yeah. You get a word like that and it's just missing, you know, you can't... Critical, that's yes. The one. I'm very critical. Skeptical, but not cynical.
Hope you enjoyed that. And another piece of music now, and following on from the Descendants of Smith or Garden of Uranium theme, I thought I'd play the title track Garden of Uranium.
It's fuel in a handshake and power in a smile. Energy to spare and time to reconcile, and every blade of grass and breath of air. Future sitting there. And you don't care about the children. There's plenty where they're from to populate the garden of your uranium. There's power in a sunray. Travel on the tide, hurricanes and storms to saddle up and ride, in every wind of change on any side, an idea to be tried. And you don't care about the children, there's plenty where they're from to populate the garden of your uranium. And there are the megalos with power in their hands, dumping lethal waste in shallow pasture lands, scattering suicide into the winds, till no one about the children, there's plenty where they're from to populate the garden of your uranium. Thank you.
Now what I'd call a bit of a bonus interview here. I got an email from Dave Burnham last month saying, I can't recall if you've got this, but a friend of ours, Russell Garrett, sent me a copy of Roy being interviewed on LBC radio. Actually, it might be GLR, might be LBC, by, I think, Leslie Judd in the late 80s. Thanks, Dave. I'm pretty sure it is Leslie Judd, and it's quite an amusing interview, really. Who would have guessed that Leslie Judd was a Roy Harper fan?
Sort of turning the oxygen off in the intensive care unit. You know.
Hey!
Somebody got a grandstand seat up there. Doesn't matter, really, does it? I mean, who cares? There's only sort of 400 or 500 lunatics in this room.
19!
Doesn't matter, does it?
Is one of those characters of the music business who seems to reappear intermittently with musical offerings that are never predictable. I did think, though, that recent lack of news about him might mean that I'd have to turn to my increasingly dog-eared collection of Roy Harper records from now on when I wanted to hear him. And then, what do I see advertised last week but a series of Roy Harper gigs at the Mean Fiddler, the Half Moon and the 100 Club. So, I rang him up earlier today to find out what he's been up to. Good morning, Roy. Are you awake?
Hi, Leslie. I'm... yes.
Just about.
Yes, thank you very much. Yes.
Listen, am I right in thinking that you haven't been playing in London for a while, or have I just not been reading the right papers?
Well, there's actually the last... These are the last four of a tour which has lasted for 32 gigs.
What, all over the country?
Yeah, and Scandinavia.
Right. And what about the album?
There's an album being... We're about to start now. I mean, I ditched one that we made about 6 months ago, which was called Burn the World. We decided against it for lots and lots of reasons, too complicated to go into now. I wrote some more songs, and we've got a choice of about 15 or 20 songs to go into the studio with, which we're going to do as of Wednesday.
Right. The songs, do they sort of reflect any particular area of your previous work? Or is that a difficult one to pin down?
Well, it is a difficult question. The thing is that they're perhaps more... I have been on a kind of... a sort of Greenpeace-type kick for 4 or 5 years, but since everybody's jumped on that one now, there's not much point in... The thing is that there's so many people are interested in it now, it's kind of that there are plenty of so many other places for me to concentrate my attention on that it's not really worth me doing going into that any further.
Do you really mean to say you think the message has been got across, Roy?
Well, I if it hasn't now, I can't help it. I'm a drop in the ocean.
Yeah, I get your meaning.
Yeah.
Listen, you're
well, I've drifted off more now onto a kind of an anti-extreme religious thing.
Right. Well, that's pretty different to anything you've done before then, isn't it?
Not really. There have been sort of... there have been odd little things in the past that have suggested it. I mean, way back, the same old rock, for instance, off Stormcock is the same kind of song.
Right. Is there anything particular that has made you think about this issue?
Yeah, I just think the Islamic thing's gone too far.
The Salman Rushdie affair, presumably?
Well, no, bombing people out the air.
It's not a terribly good idea to
not
get your message
idea
across.
Not their children. You don't get me on your side.
Yeah, maybe making records is a rather better way to do it. Listen, Roy, you're a very hard man to categorise musically, particularly to describe to a generation who's maybe not familiar with your songs of the past. Can you do that for me?
Can I categorise me?
Yes.
Well, it's very, very difficult. I mean, there's a lot of people in music who appreciate what I do, but there's not a lot outside music who do. I think there's a lot of people at one time or another in the 70s that expected me to become sort of some mega type of phenomenon, but what they forgot, I think, was that their interest in music was much bigger than the general public's. But you see, the thing is that when I was 14 or 15, all I wanted to be was a reincarnation of Percy Shelley. You know,
the poet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's what I am, really.
You're lyric driven.
Yes.
What sort of numbers are you going to be doing in your concerts over the next few weeks? Will it be a mix of old and new?
Yes, it's about 65% new, I would think.
Right. Will you by any chance be singing When the Old Cricketer?
Yes.
You will?
This is true.
Well, this is great, and it's also just the reason I needed to play it myself. Roy, thanks very much for talking to us today.
Pleasure, it's a great pleasure.
And I hope that all the gigs are good ones.
They usually are these days. As you get older, you get better, but the media pay less attention to you.
Roy, nice talking to you.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Thanks, Leslie. Bye.
Winter streets of London for a moment. I was transported to an old English country summer like it never was, but I always used to think it was. And that was Roy Harper and the Grimethorpe Colliery Band playing When the Old Cricketer. And Roy will be playing at the Mean Fiddler on Monday night, the Half Moon on Tuesday, and then in the new year at the 100 Club on January the 2nd.
Time for a little bit of listener feedback. Now, I've heard from quite a lot of people in the last few weeks, and I'm not going to read all of those out. Sorry, I might catch up next time. Two really important ones to cover. First is an email from Marco, who summarises the Camden Jazz Cafe gig so well, I just had to read it out to you. He says, "Hi all, just a quick few words to say what a great time Kat and I had yesterday at Roy's gig at the Jazz Club. I guess proceedings started off well with the Mass Stormcock meet at the Oxford pub Camden. As ever, it was great to catch up with Paul and Vicky, James, L, Stephen, Linda, Dave, Big Chris, Paula and numerous other peeps we hadn't met before. A pleasant late afternoon was spent sinking several rather fine pints of London Pride before we moved on to the Jazz Club in time for what I mistakenly believed to be a Mojo Prize presentation ceremony before the gig started. After the imaginary prize ceremony, Roy came on stage around 8:30 p.m. Roy was on fine form and kicked proceedings off with One Man Rock and Roll Band. The sound was great and Roy, though perhaps just teensiest bit rusty, was on superb form. I was so engrossed that I didn't even think about making a note of the set list, and I'm hoping someone with better memory than me will oblige by posting. But if I remember correctly, One Man was followed with Girl from the North Country, Don't You Agree, Pinches of Salt, Hangman, Commune, Green Man. Roy finishing the set with a cracking version of Me and My Woman. After a lively debate with the crowd, Roy encored with Cricketer in the context of the evening. The allegory here couldn't fail to resonate. Personally, I enjoyed this gig more than any since Roy's birthday gig in 2001. Seeing Roy in such masterful form, entrance an audience entirely on his own, so beautifully, took me back so much so that at times the evening got very, very intense for me. Wondering how many times, if at all, I'll ever see Roy play like this again. Remembering Roy playing these songs so many, many times in our shared past, when we were both much younger, and the promise of our lives still fired well into a distant future, the fading resonances of our lives in those times, and for me, the warmth of a new life leading me swiftly into an exciting new future. I guess seeing Roy with this group of people, and for the first time with my wife-to-be, was an experience I will not easily forget. In summary, if I had to pick my fantasy Roy gig, in terms of tracks selected, emotional resonance and intensity of performance, I don't think I would have changed a single track. Cheers, Roy. You are, and always will be, a star. And thanks to everyone who said hello. Marco, that message was so evocative, and in fact I'm welling up slightly while I'm reading it, because it's taken me right back to that lovely evening. Couldn't put it in any better way than that, so thank you for sending that in, and so lovely to spend the afternoon with you and everybody else. I also have a message to read out from Big Chris, or Chris Moxon, and he doesn't know I'm doing this. He says, "Hi, hope you're all well. I am, though don't know what I'll be like in the afternoon of 7th of August 2010. Basically, I'm doing a sponsored trek up Mount Snowdon on Saturday 7th of August in aid of the Love Hope Strength Foundation, trying to raise cash to help support UK-based cancer centres. Now, this won't come as a surprise to most. I'm not exactly fit at the moment, have I ever been? So this challenge is going to be just that, I am determined to make it to the top and then back to the bottom in one piece, and would love it if you could spur me on by donating some cash. I've created a webpage, www.justgiving.com/bigchrisbigmountain, where you can read more about the event and the charity, and more importantly, donate online, or if I'm likely to see you in the next couple of months, I will accept cash, checks, etc., as I'll have a good old-fashioned sponsorship form with me. Please pass on this request to anyone else who knows me, or in fact, anyone you know who may be interested in sponsoring me. Many thanks in advance. Cheers. Big, but hopefully not as much by August, Chris." Now, as most of you probably know, Love Hope Strength is Nick's charity of choice, Nick Harper's charity of choice, so it's a very good cause, and I will put a proper link to Chris's Just Giving page in the show notes for this episode. And that is pretty much it for this episode 30. Sorry it took a little while since the last one. Hopefully the next one will be out in due course. I have a couple of people that have agreed to be interviewed, so let's see where we go with that. Credits and copyright. This podcast is issued under a Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivative Works 2.0 UK, England and Wales license, which basically means you can share it with others. that you can't change it, claim you made it, or charge any money for it. The Roy Harper music in this podcast is used by kind permission of Science Friction Limited and is not for copying or redistribution. And many thanks to Adam Leonard for the great Roy Harper intro music. If you want to help the podcast, give us a review on iTunes if you haven't already. Feel free to send in voicemails, either email me an MP3 of you speaking, pd@stormcocknet.net will do for that, or if you want to use plain old telephone, 01223 850 282, or if you're outside the UK, +44 1223 850 282. There's a 90-second limit on those, so you have to be fairly succinct. And that's pretty much it for this time. I'm going to finish off this episode with How Does It Feel? This is a live version from the audio CD that accompanies Beyond the Door, and I thought it was appropriate since the last time we spoke. The UK has had a change of government. We find ourselves in a bizarre Conservative and Lib Dem pact. Who knows where that's going to go? I'm kind of hoping the Lib Dems will act as a controlling influence. Do I mean controlling? Sanitising? I don't know. I'm struggling for the right words here. But I think you understand my intent. To help stop the Tories going completely loopy. Might be a bit of a tall order. But I thought a song of Roy's about voting might be vaguely appropriate. That's all from me. See you next time. Bye for now.
How does it feel to be completely unreal? How does it feel to be a voter? How does it feel to be a voluntary here? I wonder whose it is. I see it queuing up outside St. Peter's Gate. You can feel bona fide if you ride with the tide. But you know it's not real. How does it feel out on your own? How does it feel to be thinking? How does it feel to be out on the run with a mindless world at your heels? Well, I wish I had no answers to put to you. I got me so high tide, I feel that most of me has died. And you know it's so real. And outside on the dragon, and inside in the cold, mommy's on the bandwagon, daddy's just getting old. Through the blood spew heavens, the roar of lust complains. Please let me in, I have no sin. But you know I'm not real. How does it feel to be the master's right-hand nose? How does it feel to be lieutenant? How does it feel to be stood on someone's toes with a leech bleeding you for rent?
Will you say you want a bit more rank? You wanna be a bigger wheel? You can feel magnified if you're high in that kind of pride. But you know it's not real. And how does it feel with the white flag in your fist? How does it feel to have two faces? How does it feel with your God strapped to your wrist? And him leading you such a chase? Well, you got one set of words for him. You got another for me. Gonna feel mystified when your eyes identify. Don't worry, kid, it's not real. And outside on the dragon, and inside in the cold, Mommy's on the bandwagon. Daddy's just getting old. Through the blood spew heaven. The roar of lust complains. Please let me in. I have no sin. But you know I'm not real. I'm not real.